Hello, everybody. My name is Ramon, and this is Ramon's Gadget Talk for Tuesday, 12th of January, 2021. Our first episode of 2021. Obviously, kind of late to the party saying Happy New Year, but oh well. 2021 is truly here, and obviously, you might have noticed I didn't do an episode the last 2 weeks, so forgive me if I'm kind of lagging out. Oh well. But obviously it's the beginning of this year, and obviously a lot of new technology has kind of a lot of new toys and devices and gadgets have been shown off at CES, the Consumer Electronics Show. This year's edition, however, is unique. It's the first time it's being done all virtually, so there's no in-person events or anything like that. So it's all virtual. You kind of have to watch a whole lot of live streams and Zoom sessions, and well, oh well, it's kind of fun. But obviously, you don't have to get up and travel all the way to Las Vegas to experience the latest and greatest technology. You can just, sit at home and check it out for yourself. But the virtual manner of the event hasn't really stopped the furore and excitement of new devices kind of coming out, and things have come out. I think if we pack them into under a half an hour kind of period, under a 35-minute sort of episode. Kind of what we tend to do, I'd probably say a few seconds for every. Recently, and that was NVIDIA has announced a brand new GPU at CES. This was kind of like neck and neck after this just came out today, right? It just recently came out in the next minute or so, last couple of minutes or last hour or two. The NVIDIA GTX, the RTX. We have a new 60 series graphics card, the 3060, the RTX 3060. It has ray tracing, phenomenal kind of ray tracing. Apparently, it's got 10 times the ray tracing performance of the NVIDIA GTX 1060. I believe, yeah, 10 times. Oh God, my computer is like lagging. I mean, just, 10 times ray tracing performance of GTX 1060, making a formidable upgrade in the foundation of gaming PC platform, powerful enough to handle cutting-edge titles such as Cyberpunk 2077 and Fortnite, with RTX on at 60 frames per second, obviously at full HD resolution and all. The RTX 3060 has 13 shader teraflops, 25 ray tracing teraflops for ray tracing, 101 tensor teraflops to power NVIDIA's deep learning super sampling or DLSS sort of technology, using artificial intelligence to create a sort of a sub a subpar a quality par excellence gaming experience, you could say. 192-bit memory interface, 12 gigabytes of DDR6 memory. On top of that, you have features such as resizable bar. Apparently, this is, I mean, the CPU can access the GPU pretty much with the right motherboard, which is interesting. And obviously, this is a 30 series card, so you get all the beautiful features of a 30 RTX 30 series card. So it's incredible, really. I mean, and you get all this incredible gaming performance. Obviously, you get more crispier gaming, you could say. 1440p is probably possible at this point now. The RTX 3060 will start from $330. Now, this is a big deal, $330 for a top-notch GPU that can play games with ray tracing and everything at full HD, and then 1440p, 60 frames a second is doable, and in 4K you could start to do it with a whole lot of tweaking. It's incredible, really. And you're able to get the 3060 in late February. Obviously, be ready because scalpers might get this one big time. I don't know if they will have enough of these GPUs to start with. So roughly give and take $70. So yeah, for less than seven, for obviously seven, if you have $330 roughly, then $70, and then you can get the PS5 Digital Edition. If you have a PC already, $330 is a good purchase in terms of graphics performance. You get a bit of a bump in graphics, and you can get ray tracing if your setup really supports it. Obviously, assuming there's no bottlenecks, give and take. So able to get late February, $330, the RTX 3060. Switching gears to the CPUs, we have new Intel and AMD processors. What a time, guys! What a time! Obviously, both Intel and AMD have released brand new CPUs. Now, the processors that kind of shown off already, both of them really, are for the laptop market for 2-in-1s, convertibles to laptops, Chromebooks, that kind of, because that's more consumer facing. You have desktop CPUs, but obviously they'll come a little later because obviously those who want to put desktop chips, that's another time really. But obviously, for first, I mean, in terms of recent is you could say, AMD has launched Ryzen 5000 laptop processors. They have a new Ryzen 5000 series chipset, and now they have mobile CPUs or laptop versions of their really good chips. This is based on the 7-nanometer Zen 3 architecture, hence they're probably one of the most powerful of them all. So from the 5000 series, you have two sets of processors, the Edge line of processors, which are intended for gaming and content production, and then the U series is essentially for like your Ultrabooks and Chromebooks and those sort of products. And obviously, this is AMD Ryzen is AMD's answer to Intel Core processors in terms of efficiency, performance, overall clock speeds, and much more. In terms of that, on the top of the line processor, the AMD Ryzen 9 5980HX is an 8-core processor, 16 threads, 45 watt plus power consumption with a boost frequency of 4.8 gigahertz, obviously base of 3.3, which is ridiculously fast for laptops. Apparently, I don't know what this is. The U, it's kind of confusing. There are a lot of various variants. There's the H and the U, and then the HX and the HS, which is going to be kind of confusing. So you'll probably have to do your research. Where is this? So on the top U series U variant chip, the 16-thread Ryzen 7 5800U has a 1.9 GHz clock speed. We can go all the way up to 4.4 GHz, which will be good for productivity tasks. And obviously, the base clocks are obviously for productivity business machines, kind of. But apparently, it outperforms the Intel Core i7 1165G7, it's kind of complicated, I don't know how you pronounce it, by a factor of 1.23 on PC Mark 10, and beats it on a subtest involving a number of Office apps, including Excel and Edge, which is interesting. And obviously, a laptop using the 5800U can offer 17.5 hours battery life, which is not bad, really. And this is comparing to, say, MacBooks, also almost there. So, you get good battery life and 21 hours of movie playback, which is quite powerful. But aside from that, really, the top of the line 5980HX, which has 8 cores and 16 threads and all that good stuff. And then the lowest tier processor is the 5300U, Ryzen 3 5300U. 4 cores, 8 threads, 15 watt power consumption out of the gate. And it just goes up from there, obviously, in terms of power consumption and core counts. But unlike Intel, I don't know about Intel though, since Ryzen came out, Intel's also stepped up its core counts, really. And also now it offers more than 4 cores on a single processor, which is interesting. But vast majority of Ryzen's chips are on have 6 or 8 cores minimum, which I think speaks to how competitive AMD is getting with. And also, this is AMD's really big answer. Really, AMD's delivering a big punch to Intel in terms of laptop chips. They too would talk about desktop chips, but now they're looking to invade the laptop market because that's where a lot of consumers are straight away. So that's interesting. And obviously, soon you'll start to see AMD processors. It'll probably be on a affordable laptop or a good laptop near you, so be on the lookout. But the 5000 series is here. There's not much information about Threadripper though, or maybe I couldn't find it, so that's interesting. What about Intel? Intel obviously has come out gunning on all cylinders with a whole new set of processors, really. Obviously, they showed off so next generation Rocket Lake and Alder Lake architectures that they can obviously release down the road. Rocket Lake, again, I'm not much into desktops, into processors and stuff, but all I can say is Rocket Lake, the desktop variant, is probably, they've showed off a little bit, really, and what to expect. That'll come down the road. And then they showed off Alder Lake, which essentially is Intel's most powerful scalable system on chip. Due in second half of 2021, Alder Lake will combine high performance cores and high efficiency cores in a single product. Alder Lake will also be Intel's first processor built on a new enhanced version of 10-nanometer Superfin. It will serve the foundation for leadership desktop and mobile processors that deliver smarter, faster, and more efficient real-world computing. I'm kind of reading off the press release because why not? I mean, they have a lot to uncover. That's interesting. Don't know about the bit where they talked about their 11th-gen processor. Where is it? Again, they showed off a lot here. So in terms of processors for regular for good old consumers, they've showed off their 11th-gen Intel Core Edge series processors. Wait a minute, let me see. 8 series processors for laptops. So, your i5s and i7s for laptops. So now you basically have a 30, so you have two variants now, a Tiger Lake U and Tiger Lake Etch variant processors. So, I'm opening up more and more information here. All right, so the 8 series processors, Intel Core i5 and i7s, they can go up to 5 gigahertz turbo clocks up to 5 gigahertz. On top of that, max, obviously minimum cores, eight. All of them have 4 cores and 8 threads, and obviously at 35 watts they can go all the way up to 3.3 gigahertz, which is interesting. And come with Iris Xe graphics, which is interesting. And on top of that, they run at 5 gigahertz, 35 watts power consumption, resizable bar, which is interesting. Again, coming back to what we talked about in NVIDIA, Thunderbolt 4 is supported, PCIe Gen 4. It can run DDR4 RAM, which is not bad. You get 15% better performance from a 10th gen equivalent processor and a 9% overall like CPU performance improvement from a equally recent Intel processor at 15 watts. So that's kind of interesting. And they kind of claim that you could play games easily at 1080p. Very popular online games at 1080p, 70 frames per second, which is interesting. So what we have here, so you have the Intel, in terms of, there's the S35 series, which is sort of the top end, almost. So you have the 8 series mainly, which is 8 cores and 16 threads. We don't know much about it. We'll probably learn about it later. And then you have three, and you have an i5 and two i7s. So you have an i5, so you have the i5 11300 etch, and then the i7 11370 etch, and then you have the i7 11375 etch SE. Aside from quite complicated names, yikes, that's a lot. And then you have a U series, and a U series obviously is a little lower end amount, I think, based on what I know. So there is the i3 1115G4, and then the 1125G4, and then i5 1135 G7, and then the 11, and then the i7s wise, the 1165 and 1185 G7, they have the same kind of last two letters. The difference really is that the i7 1185 G7U has a higher base clock overall, and essentially U series chips interesting. They can go all the way up to 4.8 gigahertz at 1C turbo, which is interesting. Overall, they can hit around 4 gigahertz turbo, which is not bad. They claim to go up to 5, but really can go up to 4. But aside from that, you could do as on top of that, you can do 3200 megahertz DDR4 memory, not bad. You have there are your H and U series Intel Core chips for laptops and portables, if I could say that, or convertibles, yes, and they'll probably come down the road. But more interesting than all of that is 11th gen desktop Intel Core processors. They didn't talk much about it. They didn't bring much up about those processors aside from that they're obviously going to roll out the Intel Core i9 11900K, which has 8 cores, 16 threads, can go all the way up to 5.3 gigahertz. I don't know if this is boost. 30 can go all the way up to 3200 megahertz for DDR4 memory, and can do 4 Gen 4 PCIe lanes for a total of 20 CPU Gen 4 PCIe lanes, which is not bad. And can do USB 3.2 Gen X2. It's been a while since I've kind of glanced over, you know, PC specs. There's a bit, a lot to uncover, but the interesting part is that you now have a Z. What is it here? Interesting part is that you have this new processor. It's going to come out late. It's going to apparently come in Q1 2021, so later on in the year, which is interesting. It's quite fun, and apparently it claims to offer 19% performance benefit IPC, which is, I don't know what it stands for, but okay. So that's that. Really kind of exciting that Intel is obviously rolling out a pretty high-end i9 processor that obviously is this advanced in terms of performance. And you obviously expect to see motherboards that will support it straight off the gate without problems. There's Z590 motherboards that you'll expect to see. A lot of PC gaming brands have actually shown off Z590 motherboards. Everyone from Asus down to Gigabyte have shown off motherboards. So you'll probably be able to get motherboards with your fancy new CPU if that's what you're looking for. So not bad, really. Again, if you ask me, I'm interested in PC gaming, but again, it's been such a while since seeing a lot of information about PC gaming and stuff. I mean, it looks like I'm close to phones. And on top of that, equally exciting is Intel talked in their, this came out yesterday kind of, they talked about the Celeron and Pentium chips, and they claim that they're obviously 10 nanometer, but obviously that they also could be coming to Chromebooks, which is cool. They know it's in Chromebooks, but obviously they're going to be good for them, which is interesting. Obviously, check out the press release. There's a whole lot of jargon about how more productive and how your online learning and working is much better, but oh well. Pretty competitive. You have the Ryzen 5000 mobile chips, then the 11th gen Intel Core laptop processors, the Etch and U series processors, which again offer new levels of performance, which is interesting. So your next laptop would be a whole lot faster. And unlike last couple of years, you'll definitely need every extra core and watt and gigahertz compared to 4 years ago, because you're probably remotely working and learning from home. So you need all that performance. You know, more power to you. So yeah. So we kind of have to talk about, obviously we can talk about all about the processors, what about computers that will probably run all this good stuff. Obviously, we talk about the processors, the Ryzen 5000 and the Intel 11th gen chip sort of. It'll take a while for them to reach laptops. There's no information I can find at this point. But Razer have released new variants of the Razer Blade 15 and Pro 7, the Razer Blade 15 and Razer Blade Pro 17 laptops. Probably my new favorite since the MacBooks went to Apple M1 chips. Sorry, Apple, no hate on you, but M1, we don't know if it's that good. But obviously, if I have all the money in the world, I'd buy a Razer Blade. Frankly, it's a really good laptop, and it's sleek as Apple MacBooks. Anyways, so the Razer Blade, the Blade 15, Blade Pro 17 have their new versions come out. You can now get them with RTX 30 series chips, the laptop variants. So you can go from obviously 3060 all the way up to the 3080 mobile. But for context, the Razer Blade 15, which is its base model, will come as a RTX 3060 mobile laptop variant, and still a 10th gen Intel i7 processor, which is interesting. But you get a lot for your money, though. Six cores, not bad. But you get a 1440 hertz full HD display, which is not bad. So good gaming on here. And this variant, I think this is obviously at the start price. I don't know how much it will cost, but you can upgrade that to the 3070, and then obviously the advanced model, you can go from the 3070 all the way to 3080, and apparently you can get a 16 gig variant, which is interesting, with the VRAM, which is interesting. So you can get a pretty beefy Razer laptop if you're looking for that. So they chain out the chip. They obviously now offer 30 series GPUs. And the Razer Blade 15 will start from $1,699 USD, And then the Pro will be starting from $2,299, obviously. And the Razer Blade 15, able to get it for starting from January 12th, obviously through from Razer's store, and obviously a few weeks later, you can get them today, pretty much, if you're living in the U.S. On the website, essentially. But now, as I said, coming back to that, the regular Blade 15 now has actually skimmed over this one, but now you have a variety of displays, really. You get various options. So now you can get a 240 Hz QHD display and a 360 Hz full HD display, which is bananas for gaming, which 360 Hz on a laptop display is impressive. Or you can get an OLED 4K OLED display, 60 frames a second. So you have a choice. You can get a not so crispy but very fast gaming display, or a quality and high, vibrant and colorful OLED display for content consumption, for content creation. If you're from that audience, I think this is gonna be and the blade and the. The Blade Pro 17 has now a 360 Hz, 17.3-inch full HD display. So there's no option to upgrade this apparently to higher spec. And I mean, y and which one, which variant is this? Yes, and this is with the 3060, 3070, 3080. So starting it'll be 2400 bucks, and it'll go up to 3200 bucks for the Pro. And then obviously you have. And you can go down a bit, down a notch, and you could pay a bit more money, really. But really, I mean, it's good quality. You get what you pay for. It's a lot of money, but now you can get a 360 Hz laptop display on your laptop if you want to, or an OLED if you're into it. It's just bananas, frankly. So you get 30, you get RTX 30 GPUs. You get high refresh, much faster refresh rates. So Razer doing some seriously big stuff. The Blade 15 is a good deal at 1700, I mean, if you think about it. So yeah, I mean, and obviously, aside from Razer, you can also talk about Republic of Gamers, Asus, obviously, and they have a new laptop also. They've also come out neck and neck with Razer, the 17-inch ROG Strix. Okay, the Asus Strix Scar. That's kind of confusing. The ROG Strix Scar 17. That's quite a long name, but. That screams tons of performance, similar to the Blade Pro 17 that we just kind of checked out. I mean, but it has it. So, but think about it, it's like the Razer Blade, but you change the Intel processor for the Ryzen 7 and 9 processor, which and the 5000 series. So one of the first laptops with the 5000 mobile series was not bad. So you get some really fast screams, really fast performance. So the Scar ROG Scar has a 360 Hz display like the Razer. In general, or you can get a really high re vibrant and high res display also with obviously w not with the 360 Hz this frame refresh rate if you're into that. I mean, again, that's your choice. So you can spec these out the way you like them if you want. Again, a crispy display or a faster one, that choice is yours. But the ROG Scar is essentially screaming, absolutely powerful gaming laptop, thick and stuff. But you get a Ryzen 7 5800H and then the Ryzen or nine Ryzen 9 5900HX processor, and you get the th R you can choose between an RTX 3070 or 3080. You can get th up to 64 gigabytes of DDR4 RAM and roughly 1 TB of storage from the get-go. And it ha and also features an optomechanical keyboard, which is interesting, to say the least, and a full number pad, which is unexpected. That can't see it here, but okay. But you can do that. We don't know how much it'll cost. I mean, this just came out, so that's interesting. I'm sure Asus has tons of new laptops, obviously, with all the new processors coming out. The more interesting is HP. HP has like lots of desktops, you could say. They have new all new Elite and let's see, all new Elite. And EliteBook laptops that have the latest, the 11th gen Intel Core processors for the laptops, which is interesting. That's interesting. And then the HP Envy 14 has 11th gen Intel core processor, 1650 Ti, which is interesting. NVs are really good though, so that's that. There'll be plenty of things that are coming out from CES, as I said. There's just so much. I might miss out on some details, to say the least. Where was the product? I saw this laptop, which is interesting. And then there's a new, and then there's another laptop Intel kind of created. That was the HP Elite Folio. Now it's more interesting. It's one of the first of convertibles. It can go into like almost a tablet mode, but this one is interesting because it's one of HP's first laptops to come with a ARM chip, the Qualcomm Snapdragon chip, to offer a longer battery life and 5G connectivity. I think this is the thing that, again, as I earlier said about is that how laptop makers will brag about ARM chips is that you'll get always on connectivity and long battery life because this is what mobile chips are built for. The HP Elite Folio has a Snapdragon 8cx Gen 2 5G chip that delivers optional, that can do 5G, Wi-Fi 6, 24.5 hours of video playback, can watch videos for 24.5 hours, kind of almost a little longer than the MacBook Pro, which is interesting. So, yeah, it doesn't say how much it'll cost. It'll obviously come out later in the year, but HP has got obviously some new laptops based on the 11th gen Intel Core chips, i5 and i7s. And then Lenovo out here has obviously lots of new laptops of their own, as I said, with the newer processors and graphic, and again, the graphics cards. So really, you have the 30 RTX 3060, and there's the mobile variants that have come out now with all these laptops. You've got Ryzen 5000 mobile chips. What else? The 11th gen Intel Core processors for laptops. Good time to be a gamer or a PC user, that's for sure. And now let's kind of move on to phones, big phone, some smartphone stuff. We haven't seen much related to smartphones. Obviously, the S21 is about to come out tomorrow, pretty much, or day after tomorrow, give and take when you're listening to this. Really, I mean, you're gonna listen to it tomorrow, but it's probably coming out tomorrow on Thursday. And then obviously the Redmi 9T and the Redmi Note 9T has already come out. So what else in the world of phone, mobile technology, smartphone technology? Even though CES is not really the event to release brand new, it's not really the event to release brand new smartphones. Smartphones itself have their own big launch events and the coverage and everything behind it. But Samsung have shown off their new flagship chip, the Exynos 2100. Their first 5 nanometer, probably the first 5 nanometer chip, has 5G built in out of the gate, no extra network chip required. Built in 5G, 5 nanometers processor. What else? I mean, so the Exynos 2100, it's kind of a leak before, so we talked about it before. The Exynos 2100, see, notice my enthusiasm when I jump to mobile phones. It's smartphones, it's bananas. I'm a mobile guy. So the Exynos 2100 from Samsung, this will be the high-end chip that you'll see on the S21 series worldwide, except for the United States and some markets because of patent laws and all that kind of stuff. I know everything on earth, but I don't know why Samsung cannot put Exynos chips on American Galaxy phones. I don't understand the reasoning. I'm sure it's some legal issues with patents and stuff. Oh well. So the Exynos 2100 is going to be on the global variant of the S21, has one Cortex X1 core at 2.9 GHz, three A78 cores that are high performing, and four power efficient A55 cores, apparently delivering more than 30% enhancement in multi-core performance with ARM Mali G78 GPU, giving you a very fast gaming performance and welcomes support out of the gate because it's Samsung. So that's that. And you have a tri-core neural processing unit that can do 26 trillion operations per second and is more efficient. The Exynos 2100, it can support camera, the its ISPs or image signal processors can run sensors that are up to 200 megapixels, which is not bad. Can do up to six individual sensors at once, and can process four sensors concurrently from multi-camera experiences, which is not bad. Again, alluring to the S21's multi-camera capabilities, and it alluded to the fact that it can process four sensors simultaneously, which means that it will do the S21 feature of combining three sensors, pictures or video from three sensors into one video, which is interesting. So this will come out for the global variant of the S21 series throughout. And also when I say built-in 5G, it can do sub-6 and millimeter wave out of the gate. So overall, not bad really. Again, it can decode videos. It can decode videos at up to 8K 60 frames per second. Does UFS 3.1 storage. All in all, a solid equivalent to the Snapdragon 888, which is not freaking bad if you ask me. If you think about it. And then moving from processors, this also kind of came around CES when CES started yesterday, I think, or before it. Qualcomm has come out with an improved in-display fingerprint sensor, the Qualcomm 3D Sonic Sensor Gen 2. There was the first generation of these built-in fingerprint sensors, and now there's the second generation, has 77% larger fingerprint reader area, apparently 1.7 times more biometric data captured, and it's 50% faster. Essentially, it's a better sonic sensor, so this is an upgrade from the couple of first generation built-in fingerprint sensors on displays, because you couldn't do it on the side or the back, you had to have it on the display. So the sensor, they've improved a lot here from the looks of it. So now the second generation of the 3D sonic sensor from Qualcomm is roughly 0.2 millimeters. It can sense a fingerprint through solid surfaces like glass and metal, even when wet, which is interesting, to say the least. And is roughly 50% faster and 77% larger. So that's about 8x8, 64 square millimeters in overall coverage area. So kind of anywhere on the sort of bottom half of the phone, it'll capture. And you could obviously, so it's a whole lot faster. It's an improvement, a welcome improvement from the first generation. And this is going to come out in phones in early 2021. So not bad. So that's really all the PC and mobile stuff. Obviously, S21's to come on Thursday. So that'll be a whole another like 20 minutes for our next episode. So, oh well. So that's that. So yeah, as I said, with CES, I mean, there's a lot that's come out. There's the phones and computers, and then I mean, stuff to it. And then there's the TVs, which was what originally CES was what the televisions and the audio visual gear. And there's no shortage of it this year also, even it being virtual and you can't get to see the TVs from far. But there's tons of things that have come out about from all the big brands. We've kind of skimmed on Samsung, again, for time's sake. Samsung obviously has some nice-looking TVs. We talked in the pretty previous episode. But obviously, there's some really cool TVs, a lot of technology that's come out, at least, with coming to the next TV that you probably would buy in a shop near you. So first, let's start with TCL. So TCL has leading way in is chosen mini LED displays, which is interesting, and they've kind of built some has been making mini LED TVs for a few years now. This year is they're bringing out the third generation of mini LED technology, especially with a new innovative backlight technology called OD0 mini LED technology. Apparently, what OD0 means is that regular mini LEDs have like this big fat LED diode between sort of between the panel, kind of the colors and the crystals and all that, and then there's the light backlight. Whereas what TCL has done is essentially kind of squeezed the backlight and kind of almost integrated the backlight and sort of the panel into one. There's a roughly 0 millimeter distance between the backlight layer and the display layer, which is incredible. And that means, and also they've shrinked the diode, which means that basically you have tens of thousands of mini LEDs, and you have thousands of control zones, which is interesting. And that's in TCL's. And again, this is with the OD0 technology from TCL, which is phenomenal. And they have a whole range of TVs that will support this. So that's interesting. It doesn't say which TVs this will be in, but again, the TVs with mini LED technology will have this improvement, and you get a much more vibrant picture, and there's more colors to it from the looks of it. And then obviously there's 8K TVs, which will come out of four after 4K HDR. There's 8K, and they've created a new line, sort of called the XL collection. So TCL has a whole load of 85-inch TVs that they're going to offer, allowing people to get a big screen TV for big screen movie viewing and all that. So you have a basic 4 series 85-inch TV and goes all the way up to an 85-inch 8K QLED TCL TV, which is bananas. It's absolutely massive. Again, looking at pictures, I don't know how it look in real life, but it looks quite massive, that there's literally sort of a stand holding up TV from on two legs, whole big legs. And obviously this is for the TCL TVs in the US, in America, because they sell them in the US, and they're obviously branding wise it's called the XL collection. So a whole range of big screen TVs for big homes and for big living rooms. And apparently they're claiming that they'll be competitive on price, which is a big deal. So for context, the basic 85-inch regular 4K smart TV, the 4 series sort of, will start from $1,600, $1,599, and then there's the mini LED 8K, which will probably be way higher than this. So you get a massive TV. It's vibrant, it's rich, and you have a rich cinematic experience. And they have two variants that will do Q have QLED panels with mini LED technology. So there's quantum dots and mini LEDs, so they're obviously creating quite a vibrant picture. And obviously Dolby Vision and Dolby Atmos support out of the gate, along with 120 Hz HDMI support, which is not bad. So essentially, for American consumers, TCL is aiming to be the competitively priced big screen TV brand that you'd want to look out for. And I think Samsung and LG should be looking at this quite seriously, because TCL has actually gotten a bigger market share in America. The thing is, with smart TVs, I think TCL TVs in the US don't have Android TV. Globally, rest of the world, except for China, TCL TVs have Android TV built in. That's what I know. In Pakistan, they sell their smart TVs and it runs Android TV out of the gate. In the US, they use a Roku, which is very popular. So it is very popular nonetheless. And they also obviously are offering a soundbar with it, which is interesting. So, and also, as I said, again, with the Roku Smart TV OS built in, which is not bad. So it's just getting better there and there. So that's the TCL TVs. Again, we don't know how much the 8K TVs will cost, but they say it's very, we're going to be very competitive. We can take their word on that, because it's TCL. They're known for competitively priced TVs, and are probably taking advantage of that. And then you have Sony. Now, Sony have the new Bravias, the 2021 Bravias. A lot of them, the Z, and there are very few that are easy to remember. The Z9J 8K LED, A90J, A80J OLED, X95J, and X90J 4K LED, which is not bad. All these TVs, one thing they have is they're powered by an all-new chip, display chip, called the Cognitive Processor XR. Apparently, it has artificial intelligence in it. Again, AI in everything, not bad. But for display technology, for displays, not bad, because apparently it can sharpen up, it can, you know, it can tweak elements of of whatever you're sending through the TV to make it fit with the display. So it can, again, could, on top of upscaling, it can, again, it can tweak with sharpness and colors. So in layman terms, you know, I mean, AI and TVs, like, I mean, I think the only good thing with AI, having AI on televisions, is to do better upscaling and better optimization and sharpening up, and, you know, tweaking the color, and obviously giving you better content recommendations. So the fact that Sony has put effort into a cognitive processor XR for the Bravia TVs is interesting. And also, it can do virtual 3D surround sound, which is interesting. So you don't need another processor to do that, which is interesting. On top of that, obviously, for back to Earth, really. The 2021 Bravias will have Google TV out of the gate, not Android TV, Google TV built right in, so you don't need to buy a Chromecast for that. They'll do all of the Bravia TVs for 2021 will do HDMI 2.1. Again, ones with the XR chip, that, so HDMI 2.1 is key. And it has IMAX enhanced mode, which is not bad. So overall, I mean, you get a really crispy display. And yes, they have an 85-inch 8K LED TV, not OLED, LED TV, and the Z9J series, so they're big screen TV at that level. and obviously they have the Master Series A90J OLEDs. Sony does OLEDs too. Again, this is the LG panels, not the not their own, unfortunately, but it's really good, frankly. And you get the XR chip also. All of these TVs, one thing they have is that they have the XR processors, and also come with, again, they can support Dolby Vision and Dolby Atmos, and dual TV out of the gate, which is not bad. I might be pronouncing it horribly, but just bear with me. So the one thing to take out of Sony is that they have an all-new display processor, and it's going to make sharpening up stuff better with AI, which is interesting. And then we have LG. LG has obviously become more exciting because their displays are really good, and they make OLEDs, which are really good kind of OLEDs. So they have tons of TVs that have come out with. So they have OLED, lots of OLEDs, really. So now they offer with the LG C, they have the LG C1 series, which offers anything from a 48-inch to a 83-inch OLED display. I think, and the shocker part is that the LG C1, there's only a 48-inch variant, not 50-inch. A 48-inch would be great for smaller rooms and for gamers, because you can essentially, you can kind of fit it into your bedroom, kind of, and, you know. So all of these TVs will have the Alpha 9 Gen 4 AI processor. So again, helps with sharpening up content, with improving contrast adjustments and all that kind of stuff, so not bad. And again, it uses deep learning to do upscaling and also to recognize objects and faces. Again, in terms of displays and, you know, the TV's processing whatever's coming on the screen to how the display is, you know, making the colors real and everything, they're putting more and more intelligent chips. As I said, LG's obviously is a little bit advanced in that regard with the Alpha 9, which is not bad. So the Alpha 9 Gen 4 processor further optimizes picture quality, amount of light in scenes, and ambient conditions in various viewing environments. That's not freaking bad. That's really, really impressive. And then, obviously, there's virtual 5.1.2 surround sound offered with all these TVs, which is good. I would say it's a nice-to-have feature, frankly. It's not a game-changer, frankly. Oh, all of LG's 2021 TVs will have HDMI 2.1. So 4K, 60, you know, 120 hertz. That's guaranteed, so not bad. Don't know what was the highlight feature, but and also, as I said, they're obviously way more vibrant than ever, which is interesting. LG's TVs are amazing. The fact that they have an 85 inch is insane, to say the least. I mean, it's a whole lot better, to say the least. And the fact that they have a 48-inch TV now, which is not bad. So they are working to offer a smaller OLED TV. I know a lot of people buy smaller TVs, so this is a big deal. So, yeah, I mean, LG's OLEDs are amazing. We don't know how much these TVs will cost, but you'll get them. This is their lineup for this year, which is interesting. So very, very exciting times with TVs. So, yeah. All right, and obviously since CES is happening, we're probably going to go through a lot of gadgety stuff. So first, okay, let's just get to this really quick. Sony is going to be making drones. That's interesting. They've unveiled the Airpeak aircraft, and when you pair, and it's a whole, like, it's a big drone, and obviously you tie it with an Alpha camera, an A7S or something, or A7S. You can capture some really crispy drone shots, and obviously they'll be really high quality because you use the top, the frameless cameras that are Sony's, I mean, really amazing cameras. So, DJI, watch out, they're coming. And then on top of that, Anker has announced that they're launching the Soundcore Liberty Air 2 Pro, true wireless earbuds with active noise cancellation. Finally, an AirPods Pro killer from Anker. It's $130, so they're half the price of the AirPods Pro. They offer noise cancellation, which is not bad, and obviously have three ANC modes. This is competitively priced with, say, the Galaxy Buds Pro and the AirPods Pro, so they're gonna compete with it if you're not really tied with brands. They can wirelessly charge. The case can wirelessly charge. There's USB-C. You get 26 hours additional battery life in the case, 26 hours of battery life in the case itself. But overall, the earbuds can be used for 6 hours with active noise cancellation on, which is interesting. And obviously, the earbuds have 11 millimeter drivers. So you can now buy them from Anker's upside Amazon for $130. Not bad, Anker. More power to you. I mean, they're doing some really great tech, pretty much. And then Sitachi has released a 2-in-1 magnetic charging stand. If you have the newer iPhone 12, it has MagSafe. The problem is, obviously, there's not many MagSafe accessories or MagSafe charging stands. How this thing works is that essentially the MagSafe thingamajig on the iPhone 12 has magnets, so you just pop it in and that's it, and it kind of would do Qi charging, so that's interesting. So essentially, how this thing would kind of work is that there's magnets and a Qi charger in the middle, and so you pop the iPhone and it'll just do wireless charging, but it's magnetically attached, which is interesting. And this will cost $60 from Sitachi, and you can buy it. You can pre-order it from their website. And the best part is obviously it's magnetic and Qi charging, so this means you can have the iPhone rotated vertically or horizontally. Again, I'll warn you, this won't support the actual MagSafe tech, which is sad, but well, it is what it is. And then finally, LG have shown off a rolling phone. So they've kind of made a little video and they showed off the rolling phone. It kind of goes up and then it kind of goes down, which is interesting. So it can expand to a bit of a tablet mode. TCL shown the same thing off also, which is interesting. So yeah, we don't know when it'll come out. This is just a concept really, but it looks really cool. But it's a bit more natural to say the least. So yeah, and then apparently also at CES, there's a company that claims to have created a ice cream pod machine. Cold Snap is this really cool machine. Apparently how it works is you insert a flavor or serving or pod, then you obviously take and you press a button and you just wait 60 to 90 seconds and you get ice cream from a capsule, which is not bad. Honestly, capsule coffee is very popular. I feel like this will be a hit, like ice cream in a capsule. Like this will be very popular at families and stuff. This actually will come out. This is a thing that will come out later this year, and they're working on it. And they're going to do some test trials in the Seattle area. That's what I've heard. But it's really cool technology and really fun. You know, this is what CES is for. We had robot pancake machines, and then this, really exciting. You know, lovely to have an ice cream pod machine. I hope this becomes a big thing. So, yeah. I've kind of stretched the episode a little long, but as I said, there's a lot to talk about. But now, finally, electric cars, because electric cars seem to be a big, big thing. So General Motors today, sort of early today, did like their own event where they've talked about electric vehicles and how it's the future of their business. And so they've showed some things off and designed everything, kind of behind the scenes of their journey to moving to electric vehicles. And so they have some new electric vehicles that are coming out. So there's a new Chevy Bolt that's going to come out next, that they're going to show off next month. And a Chevy Bolt EUV. So it's kind of SUV, but it's a electric utility vehicle. Funny name, but okay, that's cool. Apparently, this is going to be the last that will just be built as it is, like a typical compliance car. The next version of the Bolt, that'll come out next couple of years, will be really one of the first cars that'll come with GM's new Ultium powertrain, which is gonna be a bit more powerful and an actual will probably be a solid petrol engine replacement, if you know what I mean. GM's been talking about how they're gonna move to electric and they have this big old architecture that will be better. But more interesting is the fact that the Chevy Bolt will have Super Cruise built right in, which is interesting. And they showed like a little video off. I think I was watching the stream and this kind of came in the middle, so that was interesting. It's not every day you get to see such innovations in vehicles. So we'll know more about the new Bolts next month. They'll talk about it next month. And as I said, plenty of new cars that they're looking to release Nevera. Again, they're mostly going to be crossovers and SUVs because there's more demand in crossovers and SUVs. And then on top of all that, they've talked about their freight vehicles. So they've announced a new brand called BrightDrop, which aims to essentially be an ecosystem of electric first to last mile products, essentially. Basically logistics, basically to offer electric EV logistics to companies that need it, and essentially looks like a service business to me. So interestingly enough, so they have a bunch of products. GM is looking to sort of tap into the bigger electric logistics market, hauling goods and services, and it looks like they're looking to design sort of a whole system, an ecosystem. So there's the software to manage the charging and moving things around, location, and sort of ensuring the cars come on time and all that, and fleet management and all. So there's incredible efficiencies that can be coming out of having integrated software, and then obviously they've showed off their first sort of vehicle, a whole electric van. So the BrightDrop EV600 is GM's first electric van, and is obviously looking to enter a crowded market already of these kinds of products. But this is powered by the Ultium architecture, which is going to be powerful. It can have up to two. It'll have up to 250 miles on a full charge, over 600 cubic feet of cargo area. Overall, you get 13.4-inch display if that's what you're excited about. Motion sensors, so you can't prevent stealing, and again, you get segment-leading safety, which is interesting. So standard, you have front and rear park assist, automatic emergency braking, forward collision alert, forward following distance indicator, front pedestrian braking, lane keep assist with lane departure warning, IntelliBeam, automatic high beam, and HD rear vision camera. Basically, you get good safety features standard. You get software, so essentially you can efficiently drop off packages or goods from A to B without problems. FedEx actually will be the first company to take advantage of GM BrightDrop. And again, as I said, from what I'm looking at here, it looks like they're obviously looking to create a service business out of BrightDrop. Like they have elements of leasing and offering a fleet that can be leased out to companies, and there's software with it, and you can. I mean, I think EGM is going to strike a jackpot soon enough, if you look at it, really. They've kind of created a more typical branding. It's a bit more logical and a bit realistic. I mean, the name's funny, Bright Drop, Bright Day, electric, So it's not that futuristic compared to the rivals. It's actually a little more realistic, Frank. Looks more realistic. A bit more. This could happen in the next year or two. There's no information on when this will kind of roll out, but they're going to start this program from next year onwards, which is exciting. And on top of that, there's obviously the little cargo cart that they have called the EP1. That'll be for warehouses and stuff. So it'll help move goods, and it'll be electric. I don't know what the use is for this one, but the van seems exciting, and also software that's coming with it, which is exciting in and of itself. And finally, NIO have, which is a famous Chinese luxury car brand, has released a new electric sedan, the ET7, and on top of that, a 150 kilowatt battery, 150 kilowatt hour battery, which is bananas. I read this a few days back, so a little couple of days late to this one, but this was exciting. So the NT7, ET7 actually, is it's the first sedan out there. It has a 480 kilowatt dual motor drivetrain. It is powered by a battery that can go up to 150 kilowatt hours. Pretty much, it can do 0 to 100 in 3.9 seconds. It has peak torque of 850 newtons per meter, per minute, I think, or per meter. Drag coefficient of 0.23 CD, and as I said, with a 70 kilowatt hour battery pack, it can go over 500 kilometers on a single charge, And then if you add a 150 kilowatt hour battery, the ET7 can go over 900 kilometers, which is absolutely insane. And that's absolutely, and again, this is based on the new NEDC cycle, which is representative of how much charges in these kind of vehicles. And this car will essentially have 33 sensors, four NVIDIA Orin chips, which is insane. So to count the sensors, so you have 11 8-megapixel cameras, one ultra-long-range high-resolution LiDAR sensor, 5-millimeter wave radars, 12 ultrasonic sensors, two high-precision positioning units, and all that. And essentially, you can generate with it, it can generate 8 gigabytes of data per second, which is a lot. So essentially, this is to compete with Tesla and the Model 3 and stuff. Now, this car will come out in the first quarter of next year, in the first quarter of 2022. And the car itself will cost start from $69,000 before for incentives. It will be a little cheaper if you switch to NIO's sort of battery pack changing plan. So you can essentially pay for the battery pack, because that's what matters in electric cars. It's the charging, so you can change out the battery pack as you go, and that the price will drop to something like $55,000. So that's interesting, and that's before incentives, mind you. So if you're in China, this is an exciting car, and this is different from, say, a Tesla. It's really nice looking, and I don't know when this will come out outside of China. So, and also it has a really powerful self-driving functionality. Again, competing with Tesla, so that's interesting. So there you have it. I think we've covered everything really that I can think of possibly. Everything from ice cream pod machines all the way down to 8K TVs. We've tried, and it's probably past midnight, and it's a lot of effort. And my laptop almost frozen, got stuck. So yeah, all your support is appreciated. Let's make 2021 amazing. Hopefully next episode we'll have to talk about obviously a whole lot more about the S21. We'll probably know a lot more. But yeah, that was the podcast. Again, we've stretched the 1 hour mark, so apologies for that. So yeah, what do you think? Let me know. Follow me on social media. Let me know on Instagram and Twitter at Said_Maron99. Again, we're back to the grind. So it's taken me. So I've kind of frivered. So apologies for that, really. But yeah, that was the podcast, really. What do you think? Let me know. Aside from that, thanks for listening. Subscribe to the podcast where you're listening to this right now. And I'm kind of tired. But yeah, it's your boy Malin signing out. Have a great day. Peace. And I'll see you in the next episode. Ciao.